वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
सो दिस इवनिंग आई वुड लाइक टू रीड अ वर्स फ्रॉम द भागवत गीता सेकंड चैप्टर टेक्स्ट नंबर 38. इज इट आफ्टरनून और इवनिंग? आई गेस इट्स आफ्टरनून. सुख दुखे समे कृत्वा लभा लभाव जया जयौ तथो युद्धाय युज्यस्व नैवं पापं अवाप्स्यसि. Translation: Do thou fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by so doing, you shall never incur sin. So from amongst our guests this evening, this afternoon, how many of you are here for the first time? Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Good. Well, welcome. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the most famous of all the Indian philosophical or scriptural books. The background is that a great fratricidal war is about to take place, and one of the leading generals is in great distress because he has to fight against his own relatives and teachers even. So he is a professional soldier. He is a general. It is his duty to fight. He cannot shirk his duty. He cannot avoid doing his duty. But being confused, he consults his guru, who in this case is Lord Krishna. So when we talk about fighting and war, it is not that the Bhagavad Gita is a book all about war, but rather the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us how we can live in this world and act in this world and avoid sinful activity, even though we may have to do our duty, which involves even killing. I will read the purport. Narakar will read the purport, and I will read it silently. So, in the scheme of universal time, there are four ages or four divisions, and these four ages continue revolving perpetually. So the first age is Satya Yuga, or the age of goodness, the age of enlightenment. There is, at the end of the cycle of four ages, there is a devastation of the material cosmos, and again a new cycle starts. So the first age after the new cycle starts is Satya Yuga, and it is characterized by enlightenment. All of the living beings in Satya Yuga live for 100,000 years minimum. And there is no ignorance. Practically everyone knows the purpose of life and practices self-realization, and their liberation from the material world is practically guaranteed. The method of self-realization is known as dhyana, or meditation, or it is also called ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga means the eight parts, or the eightfold, or the eight-step system. The next age is Treta Yuga, and that age, living beings can live for 10,000 years. They are slightly less qualified than those who lived in Satyayuga. They can no longer practically achieve perfection in a large scale by practicing yoga. So the method of self-realization is sacrifice, fire sacrifice, chanting of mantras, and very large-scale fire sacrifice. Have any of you, I'm sure we've had some fire sacrifices here in the temple, either some weddings or some initiations. How many of you have attended fire sacrifices? So when everybody's chanting the mantras and throwing the grains into the fire, you get a kind of dynamic feeling, you feel the spiritual energy. So in Treta Yuga, it was done with thousands of priests who were expert at chanting mantras, and great opulence was used. In our fire sacrifices, we use plastic and stainless steel and all those wonderful things, maybe some copper. So in Treta Yuga, of course, they used gold and silver and whatever utensils were used were thrown away after usage. They were considered not usable again. And in that way, the leaders of society would organize sacrifices so that the people in general could attend and get some spiritual inspiration. There are four pillars, just like in this building, there's four pillars that are holding up the building here. So in spiritual life, there are four pillars: cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, and mercy. These are the pillars of religious life. So gradually in time, these qualities of cleanliness, truthfulness, austerity, etc., they began to diminish, so that in Treta Yuga, people were less qualified. The next age was Dwapara Yuga, and people lived up to 1,000 years. I think in the Bible we find that Moses, who was Dwapara Yuga ended about 5,000 years ago, and Moses lived about 5,000 years ago, and we read that Moses lived for 900 years. In Dwapara Yuga, people lived about 1,000 years. Again, these qualities were diminishing. More animalistic, or the lower qualities of the human being, were coming out, and their godly qualities were diminishing in the course of time. And in Dwapara Yuga, people could not perform yajna or sacrifice properly, but the method for liberation was temple worship. So you are all very pious people, and you are coming to the temple every week, at least once a week, and we see many people, Christians and Muslims, etc., they go to the church or mosque once a week. But to actually practice temple worship, it requires a lot more energy. It means going morning and evening. It involves following many, many rules and regulations which help one to focus the mind on God. For example, even today in India, of course, this is not Dwapar Yuga, but still in some temples you will see that they have 56 offerings every day. That's practically one every 20 minutes. And even today, they have in the temples in India some of the more rigid ones. They have many, many rules: who can cook the offering, who can make the offering to the deity, who can do this, what the people who can enter the temple, what are the rules for dress, entering the temple, etc., etc. There are temples in South India, one famous temple, Guruvayur Temple. You cannot enter the temple with any sewn cloth. In other words, the cloth that you wear in the temple should not in any way compete with the cloth worn by the deity. Those who come to see the deity should come in a humble mood. So ISKCON devotees are accustomed to wearing kurta. So if we want to enter the Guruvayur temple, we have to take off our kurta and either wear a chador or even go with bare chest. Generally, chador is requested. So even today, there are many rules and regulations, but in Dwapar Yuga, it was far more strict. And Prabhupada once told us, when we were inquiring from him, he said, if I were to tell you all the rules and regulations of deity worship, you would faint. Now we come to Kali Yuga. This is the winter season. Kali Yuga, people live, if they're lucky, up to 100 years. And that is also very rare. Kali Yuga is characterized by quarrel and hypocrisy. In Satya Yuga, it was characterized by enlightenment, knowledge, devotion, godliness. In Kali Yuga, mercy, cleanliness, austerity are gone. Only a little truthfulness is left, and that's fading fast. So, quarrel and hypocrisy. People fight with one another seemingly for no reason at all. Most of the population being predominantly in the modes of passion and ignorance are constantly on edge. We are troubled by a very large false ego, an exaggerated sense of my own self-importance. And if anyone steps on my shadow, I immediately want to attack him. And hypocrisy. People do and say so many things, but generally speaking, if there is any, the character of men is not very strong. Everything is superficial and external. There are many examples, many grand examples of hypocrisy. There are small examples, but big examples that are international examples of hypocrisy are also there. One of the examples which has always bothered me is that there are people suffering in this world because for some reason or another they don't have enough food, they don't have enough clothing or medicine. They are deprived of the basic necessities of life. There is plenty of food in the world, enough to feed the population 20 times over. Even if you continue eating meat. If you stop eating meat, then there's 100 times over, 1,000 times over enough food. It is so expensive to eat meat. You could feed so many more people with the food grains that go into fattening an animal for slaughter. And the amount of protein that you get from that meat is far less than the protein that you would get from other vegetable and dairy products, those sources. And people talk about helping the poor. And we create big organizations like the World Health Organization and the United Nations this and the United Nations that, and we hire very highly qualified people and give them a big salary, and they hold big meetings with big banquets and talk about the suffering people in the world, but the situation continues. We spent billions and billions of dollars to send one little Sputnik into outer space, one little rocket that blows up anyway, and we could spend the same money to transport a little food to Africa or other needy places in the world, but we don't do it because there's so much hypocrisy. So I could go on and on. I'm sure you know of many more examples than I do. But basically, this is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, and there's nothing we can do about that. Now it is May. This is one of the hottest months in India. Just on June 10th, at the end of the hot season, the rainy season will start in Bombay. It's quite regular, actually. Between the 9th and the 12th, sometime, the rainy season will start. And then there will be 4 months of rain, constant raining, practically every day or every other day. And not just a few little drops or something. You can, you know, go out for a stroll in the rain and see the April showers bring May flowers. But this is heavy rain. There's nothing you can do about it. The only thing you can do is have a good, strong umbrella. You can take shelter from the rain. So similarly, there's nothing we can do about the fact that we live in an age of quarrel and hypocrisy. But if we have enough intelligence to recognize the condition that we're in, we can create a shelter for those who want to live free from the qualities of Kali Yuga. Another fact of life is that we're living in a world of duality. That which has a beginning in time will have an end in time. That which is born, it will die. Wherever you find happiness, it is simply the opposite side of distress. When you have a warm shower or a hot shower, that's just a little turn away from a cold shower. Turn the dial a little bit. You go on turning from cold. At a certain point, you begin, and it differs from person to person. At a certain point, you say, ah, warm shower. Before it was cold, but you go on turning, ah, warm shower. So in this way, the world is full of duality. And here, in this verse, Lord Krishna is guiding Arjuna how he can situate himself in a transcendental state of mind so that the miseries of the material world will not disturb him. There is nothing, there's no magic formula that is going to make your life all happiness. There is no magic formula that is going to make you eternal in this material world, living in this material body. You have to go through birth and death. Even if you follow Bhagavad Gita, even if you are a devotee of Krishna, all devotees of Krishna will die. So we're not suggesting to you that you come here to the temple and pray to God that give me more enjoyment and less suffering. In fact, I'd like 99% enjoyment and maybe 1% suffering if you have to give it to me. That is not the proper strategy to try to change the material world. You cannot do that. What you can do is you can change your reaction to the material world. A devotee is able to go through the miseries of material existence without being unnecessarily or overly disturbed by them. A devotee does get old, does get diseased, does go to the hospital, does have operations, does die, but because his mind is trained to think of God and to serve the Lord and to see everything as the blessing of the Lord, he is not in distress. It psychologically does not affect him in the same way that it does a non-devotee. So here Lord Krishna is giving some of the examples which do affect people very adversely if they're not properly trained. He says, sukha dukhe same kritva. He says, in happiness and distress, try to treat them both equally. This is very interesting. We can all understand that when there's distress, I should try to control my mind and not get too disturbed by it. I was just reading about one devotee. His name was King Chitraketu. So he had everything a person could want materially. He was a king. He was very handsome. He was very wealthy. He was highly respected. He was a very pious king. All of his subjects were loyal to him. He had many loving wives. But one problem that he had was, despite everything, he could not get a child. Somehow or other, by the arrangement of fate, although he had a very large number of wives, but they were all barren. So one day, a great sage, a great powerful mystic, who had some supernatural power, came to his palace. So the king pleased the sage by serving him, by offering him a nice place to sit, by offering him sweet drinks and nice foods, and by nice words of praise. So this sage, Angira, although he could, by his mind, he could enter the heart of the king and understand everything, still he asked him questions. How are you doing for your people? In this way, he asked him about his welfare. Finally, the king revealed his problem, that I cannot get a son. There is a saying that putra hinam griham shunyam, a very famous wise politician in India named Chanakya. He gave so many wise sayings. So one of them is that without a man may have everything, but if there are no children, especially a son who can take over the family, then that family is like an empty void. So Angira agreed to help the sage, to help the king, and he performed a yajna sacrifice. And then the king cohabited or had sex with his first wife, Kritadyuti, and Angira gave her the nectar, the remnants from the fire sacrifice to eat. And by that combination of the king's semen and Angira's blessing, she got a son. So at the time of giving the blessing, Angira said that this son will be both Harsha and Shoka. It'll be a cause of joy in your life, but it will also be a cause of, this son will also be a cause of misery to you. So Chitraketu couldn't understand what the sage was meaning, but he didn't care because his desire was being fulfilled. He was going to get a son and he was so joyful. And in due course of time, the child was born and everyone in the kingdom was happy. The queen was happy. The king was happy. But there was a group of people who weren't happy. Who can guess who those people? Huh? The co-wives, yes. Yeah. Because they were thinking now Kritadyuti will get all the attention of the king and I will be neglected. So, sometimes human beings, under the influence of envy or greed or lust, do things that one would not expect of them. They do some very bad things. So these wives, they plotted, they made a plan, and they poisoned the young boy. And then the king experienced Shoka. So Angira, actually, first of all, the king and his wife and all the members of the palace, everybody was crying and in great distress. The king was so attached in his happiness that the loss created such distress because his attachment was very great, therefore his distress was very great, and he became practically paralyzed in shock. So anyway, it's a long story and there's much more to it, but the point I'm making is sukha dukkha. We can understand that I should be detached from suffering. But what does Krishna mean, be detached from happiness? We can understand that when my business fails and I lose $10 million and, you know, all my employees run away with the profits or whatever, I should not get too disturbed or I won't be able to do anything. We can understand in loss, I should be controlled. In defeat, there's nothing I can do about it. It's finished. I've been defeated. So I should try to adjust accordingly, not be too carried away. But when everything goes nicely, when my business makes a huge profit and enters the stock market and challenges Bill Gates, when I'm victorious in what I'm doing, I defeat my enemies, I'm praised by everyone. When there's cause for pleasure, happiness, why should I be detached from that? So this is the point, that as long as you get in any way attached in the material world, you'll have to turn constantly on the Ferris wheel. You know the Ferris wheel? Oh, you do. Okay. You have to turn on the Ferris wheel of material life, happiness and distress, pain and pleasure, victory, defeat, profit, and loss. You have this in Slovenia in the circus? In New York they have it. You've probably seen some movie in that famous park in New York where they have all the rides and everything. So we're living in troubled times. In the last 1,000 years, whatever disasters there have been, in the last 10 years, there has been more. There have been more natural disasters and disturbances in society in the last 10 years than there have been in the last century. And in the last 3 years, there's been three times what there's been in the last 10 years. There are problems all over the world. So how do we live peacefully? How do we create a shelter for ourselves? How do we go about fulfilling life's duties and become Krishna conscious? That is the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. So I'll end here with a little verse that the last verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Tasmad agyana sambhutam hritstam jnana sinatmana chitvainam sangshayam yogam atishto tishta bharata. Therefore the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. So Krishna is not telling Arjuna, armed with a Brahmastra weapon or armed with a mountain weapon or a wind weapon. He's saying armed with yoga. Use the weapon of knowledge to destroy your doubts. Increase your faith by studying Bhagavad Gita and understanding the philosophy and applying it in your life. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions? I know this is the place where people ask lots of questions.
It's a sincere spiritual master. Can you tell us what, like, for us beginners, neophytes, what are some advices, because we are not so much fixed in Krishna consciousness, what are some advices for us in Krishna consciousness?
Yes. Rupa Goswami has given a formula. He says, Adau Shraddha. In the beginning, try to strengthen your faith by associating with devotees. There are five very important items out of a long list of items. There are five very important items mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. And of all of those, there is one most important item, and that is to associate with other devotees. So you increase your faith by coming to the temple or by meeting in Namahatta groups or whatever way you have of associating. Tata, next, is sadhu sangota. When you meet with devotees, engage in discussion of spiritual subjects. Don't engage in gramya katha or village talk. Not that everybody who lives in the village is bad, but the point is village talk means how are you? Oh, I'm fine. How is it? Did you had an operation last week? Oh, that's nice. You know, small talk. Talk about Krishna Katha as much as possible. Srinvatam Sva Katha Krishna. And try to seek out the association of devotees who are steady. Not that they're great heroes or charismatic or flamboyant, but the greatest quality of a devotee is that he's steady and peaceful in his service. He may be charismatic and flamboyant and etc. also, that's okay. But associate with sincere devotees. And tatha bhajana kriya. As your faith grows, as you develop friendship with other devotees and you feel a little bit confident. You're no longer nervous about coming to temple. You feel happy. You feel there's value here. Tata bhajana kriya. Try to engage in some type of regular program of spiritual life. It is called sadhana. Tasmat tvam indriyani adau niyamya bharatashava. Krishna says, try to follow some regulated lifestyle that will help you to destroy lust, anger, and greed. I have had the opportunity in India and in the West to some degree to meet and associate with very, very big people. Some of the biggest industrialists and multimillionaires in the world. I'm still poor, but still. I've noticed that these people are always very regular in their activities. Successful people are generally regulated. They're not whimsical. They don't do things in a capricious way, but they're very orderly and systematic. So sadhana means that we try to organize our life in such a way that we can execute our devotional activities so that it's not a strain for us. It becomes easy to do, and our mind becomes free for thinking of Krishna all the time. Bhakti yoga is a process, and every detail of the process has utility. There is a reason for it. In fact, if the reason for following the rule or regulation is not achieved, the rule or regulation can be adjusted or changed. So, tata bhajana kriya, by doing that, gradually one will become purified, anartha, nivritti. And when one gets that kind of purity, his faith will become even stronger. And like that, you asked about beginners, so that takes us up to the end of beginners. The first thing is associate.
He said, since you are here, I will use the opportunity to ask you, at what state do we feel actually Krishna besides us, so to say, with us? Because this is the most important, that we feel Krishna with us.
Well, that's up to you. You can feel Krishna with you from day one.
Whatever, yeah. He's asking, not from Krishna, only it depends only on me, not on Krishna?
It depends only on your desire. Krishna says, ye yata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajami aham. Krishna's arms are open. He's inviting you, come, I want to embrace you. You're hesitating, you're shy. There's no impediment to pure devotional service. It's only in our mind. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to change anything. You have to change your consciousness. Are you ready to follow Srila Prabhupada? So chant Hare Krishna, have no worries, be happy. Those are his instructions. Are there any other questions? Only two questions per customer, sorry. Otherwise you have to pay little chips. Two questions are free. Any other? That's the signal. On the stage, when they want you to get out, or we were in the store the other day. It was actually 4:45 or 4:40, but the employees, it was Saturday, and they wanted to get out. So they kept turning on the lights and turning them off, trying to remind us to get out. You know? They should have stayed open till 5. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai, Sri Lopi Ki Jai.